A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents the Edward R. Murrow program with Don Hollenbeck. If hard, hot summer driving has made your car's engine act a bit sluggish, hesitating and grunting on the hills, chances are the valves need attention. They're sticking, fouled up with gummy carbon and varnish. The cure isn't expensive. Just a 4-ounce can of Amoco 586. Your Amoco man mixes it with the gas in the tank. Amoco 586 works as you drive. It cleans valves, helps engines run better. Amoco 586, ask about it. And now here is Don Hollenbeck with the news.
Good evening. The Defense Department announces today that 164 Americans have been killed in action, 448 wounded, 4 missing during the past week of the beginning of the truce talks in Korea, to bring the casualty total to 78,726. As for those truce talks themselves, the current meeting, the third one, may produce an agenda or it may not. For the latest progress report, we switch now to CBS Tokyo, George Herman reporting.
The 5 men of the United Nations ceasefire team appear to have taken off some 15 minutes ago for the third day of talks toward a ceasefire in Korea. In the beginning, at least, today's talks will once again deal with the problems of the agenda rather than with the ceasefire itself. The negotiators have not yet agreed upon the order in which they will take up the various points to be discussed in the negotiations. They have, however, made some progress in lining up the agenda, progress which one of the negotiators described as being fair, fair. In addition to the 5-man ceasefire team and its aides, assistants, and interpreters, another large group has set out for Kaesong this morning. 20 United Nations correspondents, including John Jefferson of CBS, started out a few hours ago on the long trip. By tonight, our time, or tomorrow morning, state's time, they will be filing the first reports and making the first broadcasts on what is going on in Kaesong. Incidentally, they were 25 minutes late in leaving, not because of military inefficiency, but simply because the anxious correspondents overslept. This, too, appears to be a sign of progress in the negotiations. General Ridgway has said that for fear of jeopardizing the talks, no UN newsmen would be allowed into Kaesong until it was evident that the negotiations were on the track and would stay there. The newsmen will not, however, be allowed to cover the proceedings themselves. And it appears likely that once again, much of the information, including quotations from the talks, will reach the allied world from communist broadcasts. Yesterday, Radio Moscow, Radio Beijing, and Radio Pyongyang outlined the first draft of the communist peace terms. They differed from what the UN has been asking for in several minor ways. They ask a ceasefire first and an armistice later. They ask that the boundary for the ceasefire be not the present fighting line deep inside North Korea, but the 38th parallel itself. And they call for withdrawal of all foreign troops from Korea as soon as possible. This last point has been termed political by UN negotiators and therefore outside the scope of the talk. Here in Tokyo, American suggestions that a ceasefire along the 38th parallel will look like a defeat to the peoples of Asia has been poo-pooed by a number of Asiatic diplomats and officials. An editorial from an Indian newspaper received here points out that the Chinese are now apparently accepting terms which they angrily rejected last winter. And it adds that this represents a tremendous UN victory. And a Southeast Asian representative here added that if the UN were to insist on fighting its way farther north than the parallel, it might add weight to communist propaganda that the Americans are imperialists rather than merely resistors to aggression. This is George Herman in Tokyo. Now back to Don Hollenbeck in New York.
As the discerning listener has undoubtedly noted, the amount of really solid information to come out of Korea during these past few days of indecision and experiment will strain no one's ability to absorb it. This is perhaps no more than is to be expected at this stage of an operation which might be compared to the decision of a couple of brawlers to call it all off, the while each tries to peer behind the other's back to see what brass knuckles, shillelaghs, or other armament may be concealed to catch him off his guard. During this uneasy prelude to peace, very little in the way of dependable information can be expected. We may be sure that whatever the communists release for public consumption is for that purpose mainly, although in it there may be the seeds of fact, the basis or the bones of something which later will have body and can stand examination and analysis and discussion. For whatever the publicity value of this preliminary maneuvering and skirmishing may be, the communists appear to have made much more of it than the Allies have. They lost no time in announcing to the world what their terms for a ceasefire would be, whether they are actually the issues which will occupy the attention of the conferees or not. Our side seems to have been extraordinarily timid about insisting on what would seem to be a minimum of privilege of communication. The first decision to send some Allied correspondents to the truce city was hastily reversed when the communists objected. Now that they have relented, a group of Allied reporters will be permitted to make a cautious approach to the conference room in the finest house left standing in Kaesong and are now on their way, as George Herman told us. It's, of course, the privilege of the communists to make whatever propaganda hay they like out of these events. It's also our privilege and obligation to see that some sort of mild propaganda of our own gets around. As has been said before, it will count only if there are some facts to give it an edge. We have tonight the first account of something of what goes on in this big room in the finest house in Kaesong. It's based on the notes of Colonel George Rulin of La Cruces, New Mexico. He attended the Wednesday session as an observer, and here are some of his impressions. There is no chairman at the meetings. So far, neither side has attempted to dominate the conference room, although the North Koreans have showed signs. The delegates are seated at a long table. There are two flags in the room, the blue and white United Nations banner, the red and blue hammer and sickle device of North Korea. And the North Korean delegate, General Nam Il, runs things on his side of the table, Colonel Rulin says, not the Chinese, or he apparently runs things, which of course is to be expected, whatever General Nam is told before and after the formal sessions. General Nam sits at one end, Admiral Joy, for our side, sits at the other, the rest are along each side. The extreme rigidity which characterized the first session seems to have relaxed some. Both sides show an ability to smile understandingly at an awkward translation, and there are many of these. It's one of the big problems of the negotiations. Some American cameramen were also permitted to visit Kaesong today. They report the Chinese troops on guard were pleasant, friendly, but uncommunicative and very camera shy. They turned their backs when the shutters clicked. No effort was made to restrict the activity of the photographers outside the conference room, not a gesture or an incident that could be considered hostile or unfriendly. From Europe today, there come a number of reports indicative of the Kremlin's dissatisfaction with the administration of some of the satellite nations and its efforts to do something about that. These reports funnel into London from Bulgaria, Romania, and Poland, and while there is, of course, no way of knowing how accurate they are, some Western diplomats think they may show a pattern that Moscow is getting rid of a number of previously highly regarded commissars, generals, and other party leaders. For example, anti-Red refugee sources say an attempt was made recently to kill Marshal Rokossovsky, the Russian exported to run Poland's army. From Romania, a report that Premier Groza is out of favor. From Bulgaria, a story that Premier Chervenkov is on his way out. In a special dispatch to the New York Times today, C.L. Sulzberger writes that although both Groza and Chervenkov hold the formal title of Premier, neither is permitted to exercise any authority, and both are under constant surveillance by security police. The Bulgarian people, for example, have been muttering lately about communist rule. Moscow's reaction is to tighten it, and some Western diplomats see the beginnings of a move by Moscow which could ultimately lead to the complete absorption of the satellite nations into the USSR. Whatever basis in fact this has, certainly no chance will be taken on the possible emergence of another Tito. Also from Romania today, a report relayed by CBS correspondent Alexander Kendrick in Vienna. Kendrick says he learns through diplomatic channels that in Romania there is rapidly increasing and intensifying anti-Semitic activity sponsored by the communists under the guise of an anti-Zion campaign. Kendrick says small groups of Reds form themselves into what are called enlightenment teams and are assigned to Jewish settlements to persuade the Jews to renounce plans to emigrate to Israel. The Enlightenment, Kendrick says, takes the form of beatings, extortions, and the confiscation of property in the familiar pogrom pattern. One Romanian newspaper is printing a series of editorials designed to show that the Jews supported Hitler and the fascist Premier Antonescu in the war against Russia. Kendrick says the current deportations in Hungary, up to 30,000 of them recently, have in large measure been directed at the Jews, and the same sort of deportations are now getting underway in Bucharest. Administration forces in Congress took more setbacks today in the controls fight. They admit now they cannot save the two pending beef price rollbacks, and they hope only to keep the one now on the books, and that's a faint hope. Proponents of continued strong controls are trying to stall for time, but they are disheartened by what they describe as an almost complete public apathy to the entire question. Congressman Rabo, Detroit Democrat, has warned his colleagues that unless beef controls are strengthened, this session may be remembered in history as the Horse Meat Congress, and members of the Senate and House who lunch at Sam Rosenberg's Wakefield restaurant on Connecticut Avenue, and many of them do, were forcibly reminded of that this noon. In the window, they saw a sign which read, "Free to members of the Horse Meat Congress, Old Gray Mare Filet Mignon." Now, this delicacy was not on the menu, but Rosenberg said he wanted to remind the legislators of the problem, to point out that this may one day come to pass unless meat price controls are strengthened. Price Director DeSalle told a news conference today that meat price controls are already becoming unstuck, and that if Congress kills price rollbacks, the price of automobiles is sure to go up. This also made news today. W. Averill Harriman will leave soon for Iran as President Truman's personal representative in an attempt to help settle the oil dispute, although Premier Mossadegh's about-face acceptance of the proposal is thought to be simply a courtesy with no intention of compromise. In New York, federal judge Sylvester Ryan canceled the $186,000 bail which had been posted by the Civil Rights Congress for the 15 of the 17 indicted second-string communist leaders. He also barred the Congress from acting as bondsman in any case pending before him. Heavy rains are threatening northern and central Kansas with possibility of the worst flood since 1903, when 38 persons died and every city along the Kansas or Kaw River from its source to Kansas City was flooded. 10,000 residents of North Topeka suburbs have been ordered from their homes, and the Red Cross in St. Louis predicts that twice as many will be homeless by morning. The Red Cross at Wichita reports 2,700 persons marooned at Council Grove since last night, the city isolated except by air. National Guardsmen have been ordered to duty at Manhattan, Marion, Emporia, Ottawa, Lawrence, and Topeka. They've been carrying marooned refugees out by boat, many of them rescued from roofs and upper stories of homes. For all that rivers on the rampage have brought misery to men for ages, little has ever been successfully done to keep them in bounds or to compensate those who've lost lives and property. Just today, for contrast, Congress was asked to provide $22 billion for possible victims of atomic war. This is Don Hollenbeck. I'll be back in a moment with a footnote to the news. Now, here is Bob Dixon.
These sweltering summer days, you often say, "Boy, is that sun hot." It is hot. 10,700 degrees Fahrenheit at the surface. That's hot. Thank goodness the sun is 93 million miles away. But did you know that every time you drive your car, you aren't 4 feet from something almost half as hot? And that's the flame of gasoline burning in your car's cylinders. Just after ignition, it can reach 4,000 degrees. No wonder ordinary motor oil burns up, smokes, chars to carbon, loses its power to protect. But one special motor oil is refined to stand up to heat. It's Amoco's Premium Plus Permalube motor oil. It keeps engines lubricated, hot or cold, and it cleans as it lubricates. Permalube motor oil protects your engine against both dirt and wear. And that's the kind of double protection every car needs these hot, dusty summer days. Drain the old oil out and refill the crankcase with fresh, tough, heat-resistant Permalube motor oil. There's nothing better for complete engine protection. Now here's Don Hollenbeck with a footnote to the day's news.
Persons displaced by World War II are permitted to come to the United States under certain conditions. Today, Vladimir Holubev, 42-year-old Polish-Ukrainian, arrived with wife and three small daughters on their way to a farm in Wisconsin. He's the 250,000th refugee to arrive. They got a bewilderingly royal reception at the dock, and they hope that life continues to be as pleasant as it began. And that's the footnote to the news.
One of the most important things your Amoco man can do for you won't cost you one penny. It's his free battery test. It can spot battery weakness in just 30 seconds, give you warning of future breakdown. If it shows your battery will wear out soon, don't take chances. Get an Amoco Super Glass battery, the finest, most powerful battery you can buy. For batteries for Amoco products, stop at the Amoco Oval sign of greater values from Maine to Florida. Tune in to Don Hollenbeck tomorrow. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.